Coming up on today's Blow Out the Budget Coverage Next Fan Up podcast.
You know how people are. You know, some people win Powerball and then they complain about the taxes.
I'm so excited to be here. I love the show, but me being here doesn't make you less biased.
I mean, your hands are on each other every day. I mean,
guest stars galore, a football historian, a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and a former Patriots player. What more could you ask for as we get ready for Super Bowl 52? Here we go.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello again, everybody. It's me, Pod Vader. And as I already teased at the beginning of the show, it's the Blow Out the Budget edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. We've got three very special guests coming to you a little bit later on. We've got a football historian and NFL researcher extraordinaire, Russell Baxter, an old friend of mine from the place that has four letters at the beginning of it. We'll be talking a little bit about this upcoming Super Bowl matchup between the Philadelphia Eagles and the New England Patriots. Speaking of those Eagles, just to have, for the interest of balanced coverage here on this podcast. I know Neil would make a joke here about how that would be a first, but I do bring on a big Philadelphia Eagles super fan, Donnie Wood from the Ring Rust Radio Wrestling Podcast, which you can find all over the place, wherever great podcasts are heard. He is a huge Eagles fan. He was born into it. And we'll be talking a little bit about the Eagles and the Patriots. There might be some trash talking going on and maybe a little wrestling talk as well. And then we'll wrap it all up with the guy who's been on this show a couple of times before, the former Patriot, Matt Chatham, talking a little bit about the players getting ready for this Super Bowl and some of the other little things that he doesn't get to talk about all the time because, well, he's a former player, so he doesn't necessarily think about these things that us fans put our heads around. So all of that coming up. Hope you enjoy this show. We want to hear from you, nextfanup@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can always find all of our good stuff at facebook.com/NFU podcast, or just search Next Fan Up in the search bar. It'll come right up for you. You can share this show with all of your buddies. Please do leave us a review. We love when you do that. You know, we were recently featured in the hashtag two pods a day campaign going on right now. They're doing two pods a day. They started at the beginning of the year. They'll be going all the way through the end of February. And we were just recently featured, which is fantastic. Super excited to be part of this program once again. And a couple of reviews about this podcast. This one comes in from the show They See Me Rollin', which, by the way, featured today, hashtag two pods a day. They wrote, Next Fan Up is an incredibly in-depth sports podcast that has the feel of a radio show, with different superfans adding their unique perspectives of their favorite teams. Pod Vader and Rob have a show that never ceases to entertain and inform. How Rob got top billing out of all the superfans, our Buffalo Bills superfan, I will not know. While they happily goof with each other, it never devolves into a shouting match. The rookie review episode in particular is exhaustive in its analysis of each player's current performance within the season, as of mid-November at least. Their breadth of knowledge is vast, making this show a standard that all sports fans should add to their play queue. Thank you so much, They See Me Rollin'. And we'll be checking out your show here in the very near future. Appreciate the kind words. So be like They See Me Rollin' and go and share this show with all your buddies, because we got a lot to talk about. And before we get into all of our guests, you know what I got to talk about here. I got to talk about those Harry's razors that I'll be using on Monday, February 5th, to shave off the playoff beard. That's right. The time will arrive, but not quite yet. I still have a week to enjoy this beautiful beard. My wife hates it, by the way. She absolutely despises it. So I cannot wait to use all of the great stuff that I can get in the Harry Shave Kit. You know what you got to do? You go to harrys.com/nextfanup, and that's where you're going to get that trial shave kit for free. When you sign up at harrys.com/nextfanup, all you're going to do is pay for the shipping. It's a $13 value when you sign up. Your free set includes that weighted ergonomic razor handle. I prefer the plastic ones. They feel a little heavier than the metal ones, which does seem to be a little bit illogical, but for whatever reason, I prefer the plastic ones. 5 precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade. I will be using all 6 of those blades on my face Monday, February 5th. The rich lathering shave gel, which I have mentioned numerous times, has that awesome man smell. It's not raspberry cream or strawberries and cream or whatever it is that my wife prefers because she's using it on her legs and she's not using it on her face. A travel blade cover, which of course I will need because I will be traveling during the Super Bowl time. So I will have to cover my razors to make sure they're protected. Get your free trial set. Go to harrys.com/nextfanup right now. That's harrys.com/nextfanup. All right. Guest number 1, Russell Baxter. You know, it's always fun when I get to reconnect with some of the folks that I've worked with over the years. And our next guest is no exception. For those of you who knew me from the Fantasy Focus days and remember all the times I used to quote stats on the show using the terms dating back and dating back was the biggest one. This guy was the main reason why I was talking in that manner. And it's Russell Baxter, at Bax Football Guru on Twitter. NFL Spin Zone, Fansided. He does a lot of stuff, but the Twitter is where you really want to find him, at Bax Football Guru. Russell, it's been a long time, my friend.
It certainly has. There's a lot to be said for a restraining order, but I'm glad we reconnected.
We knew each other back when I was called One Name Jay and was working on the Mike and Mike in the Morning program. So,
yeah, how many names are you up to now?
So. I've only got the name that I was given at birth plus 2 nicknames, but I really only go by Pod Vader at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, since I've recreated my writing role, you know, I spent more than 2 decades at ESPN doing research. I think I've added a few names to my resume, and some of them I can't say on this airway. So.
Well, listen, I know where the good stuff is, and I know the good stuff is with you. And I mean, let's start. Let's recap a little bit about these championship games that we just watched. I mean, when we went into the Patriots-Jaguars game, I thought that it was going to be a close game. I certainly didn't expect the game that we got, which was, you know, the Patriots sort of recreating the Rocky moment where they just take blow after blow and then they come back and they beat the team almost in an expected fashion. I mean, what did you think about the Jaguars-Patriots going into it and then sort of the outcome of that game?
Yeah, I said to somebody earlier today, Jay, that the Patriots remind me of a cornerback who plays, 5 or 6 or 7 yards off a receiver and baits the quarterback into throwing that receiver in the ball, knowing he's going to break to the ball and make it a pick 6. They lull you into this. I don't know if it's intentionally, but, these comebacks are becoming commonplace. Is that because their defense hasn't been as good as in recent years? And they need to make more adjustments. I'm not sure. I mean, we have seen, just going back to Super Bowl 49, a 10-point comeback in the fourth quarter. Last year's Super Bowl speaks for itself, the 25 points. Now we see another one. We saw back and forth with Houston earlier in the year. We saw them having to come from behind to win in Pittsburgh about a month or so ago. So what it shows you is the resiliency of a team that, it certainly understands it's a 60-minute game and certainly understands that not that players are replaceable, but the players are replaceable, okay? As long as you're following the script, following the game plan, doing your homework, doing your job, that has become very, very commonplace in the lexicon of New England. Do your job and we're on to, fill in the blank. But we are now seeing a New England team that during the course of this year, and even before the year began, Jay, lost Julian Edelman, who was pivotal in the Super Bowl win over the Falcons, lose Dante Hightower, who was pivotal in the Super Bowl win over the Falcons, make adjustments, Win 13. Oh, by the way, they slumped after winning 14 games last year. They slumped to 13 and find themselves back into the Super Bowl. And talk about a bookend, okay? The beginning of this run began with three Super Bowl titles in 4 years. If they win in Minnesota, it'll be three Super Bowl titles in 4 years.
It's pretty impressive, and it's one of the reasons why I'm, as a Patriot fan, I'm a little concerned that if they win this one, then it's lights out, everybody. See ya. It just sort of feels like the perfect end moment. I mean, I'm hoping that's not the case, and there's really no reason to believe that that's going to be the case, but there are a lot of signs. I mean, this just like the last time the Patriots beat the Eagles in a Super Bowl, if the Patriots beat the Eagles again, their entire coaching staff has a turnover, minus the guy at the head. At least, again, we're assuming the guy at the head is staying on for a little bit longer. The quarterback you mentioned sort of begins his career with 3 out of 4. He's got 3 out of 4 here. Make perfect sense. He's got nothing left to prove. He's already being called the GOAT while he's playing. I mean, sort of like, hey, why don't I make millions of dollars without getting hit every week? Sort of makes sort of like the time seems right for him. There's a lot of things that have me a little bit nervous about the future of the Patriots after this game.
Well, you know, the difference between the last time, which was 2004, is 13 years. So, I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, we're all getting old, because as I always say, consider the alternative if you're not getting old. Okay? Just think about that for a second. The beginning, even before the year began, Jay, I had a sense of, I don't know if urgency is the right word, but it was the way Bill Belichick went out and handled the offseason. Okay? You notice, and they've never been shy about getting players. They've never been shy in terms of free agency. But I don't have to remind you the number of trades they made to get veteran players this offseason. Okay? They traded for Coney Ealy. It didn't work out. He wound up with the Jets. They traded for Brandon Cooks. They traded for Dwayne Allen. They signed Gillisley to a restricted offer sheet that the Bills didn't match. They went at it. They took a different path. And meanwhile, by the time the draft rolled around, they drafted four players. None. No team in the league had fewer draft choices in April than the Patriots. So you kind of got this sense that they were pushing for one last run. Okay? I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying on the outside, that's what it looked like. And lo and behold, after a 2-2 start in which they look lost defensively. They've gathered things together. I don't think they're a great defensive team. They're a great team at making adjustments. Give credit to Bill Belichick. Give credit to Matt Patricia. Just give credit to the overall experience of that staff. But it's fun. It's odd. You got to and to remind people, you know, opposed to some of the other dynasties we have seen in the league, they've done this pretty much with, you know, same two guys, the quarterback and the coach, and a lot of different pieces. They've done it a lot of different ways. But it's not like they've gone into these Super Bowls and, you know, dominated, blown people out. I mean, I don't have to tell you the legacy of quarterback, you know, Adam Vinatieri and all the – I mean, they won last year's Super Bowl by 6 points. I mean, that's like a blowout compared to what right. we've seen with Tom Brady and the Patriots.
And it took them overtime to do it.
Yeah, exactly. They scored the last 30. But think, they won those Super Bowls in the early 2000s. They were all by 3 points. Right. Okay? Then they lost the Super Bowl to the Giants by 3. Then they lost the Super Bowl to the Giants by 4. And then they won a Super Bowl by 4. And then they won. I mean, all of their Super Bowls under this realm have been decided by less than 7 points.
It's crazy.
It is in this day and age of constant change in around the league. Now, and I'll have to tell you, for them this year, and I've heard that the suggestion, you know, while they, is this their quote unquote weakest path to the Super Bowl? That's been thrown out there. I mean, you know, you know how people are. You know, some right. people win Powerball and then they complain about the taxes. Okay? Think about the playoff field that we saw this year. Buffalo, first time since 99. Rams, first time since 04. Jacksonville, 07. Tennessee, 08. Atlanta, I mean, think how crazy this is. Atlanta was the sixth seed, Jay. But Atlanta was the only team in the playoffs a year ago from the NFC that made it back this year.
You're making me transition to the NFC, and I want one more thought on the AFC and the Jaguars. You know, at the beginning of the season, one of the things I've done as a Patriots fan is, you know, it gets a little boring rooting for these Patriots winning all the time. So I pick a boyfriend team, you know, sort of the team that I've got my eye on that I'm like, that I think might do pretty well, might make a playoff run, maybe even make a Super Bowl run. And the Jaguars were my boyfriend team this year at the beginning of the season. I thought that they had put all the right pieces in place. And really it was Blake Bortles who I thought was going to be the ultimate determiner of whether or not that team was going to succeed or not. And it looked, and you know, as the season went on, the team won despite Bortles in some cases. And in other cases, he did have some good games and actually did assist his team in winning. And yesterday I saw Bortles play what looked to me like his career game. That was the best I've ever seen Blake Bortles play, and he still came up just a little bit short. So as the Jaguars look forward to next season, do you think it's best for them to stick with Bortles, or do they go a different direction?
Well, they did pick up the option on him. They made that clear, and I thought that was a great move by Tom Coughlin. And you will I'll have to remind you that during the summer in training camp, the problems that Blake Bortles was having throwing interceptions to his own team. Now, in retrospect, that might be because that defense is pretty damn good. So wasn't doing much for his confidence. But, you know, he did cut back on the mistakes this year. He cut back on the turnovers. And think about this. Not necessarily a big deal, but think about the Jaguars and Blake Bortles these last couple of years. They just played three playoff games, Jay, and didn't turn over the ball in any of those games.
That's hard
now,
to do.
I know that doesn't sound like a big deal to some. What it shows is progress. And the next progress the Jacksonville Jaguars need to do is learn how to win. They're learning, but they haven't learned yet. Okay? They went from 3 wins to overall 12 wins, if you include the playoffs. So the strides have been tremendous. But, you know, you gotta crawl before you can walk. And they did a lot of crawling and they did a lot of clawing. And I give them credit because late in the year, lost to the Niners, lost to the Titans. They looked like they were running out of gas. And then they gathered themselves, got a little confidence, won an ugly game against Buffalo, won a wild game against Pittsburgh. And I think you look at yesterday's game in retrospect, and they weren't able to close the deal and give New England a lot of credit. It held them to 2 field goals in the second half. I think what Jacksonville confidence-wise was the fact that they won an ugly game against Buffalo, and then they won a shootout against Pittsburgh. And what I think that taught the team is that they don't have to win a certain way. We can win other ways.
You mentioned sort of the turnover in the NFC in the playoffs this year, and I saw this stat on your Twitter at @BaxFootballGuru. Third straight year, the NFC sending a team that had a losing record the previous year to the Super Bowl. And so the Eagles now fill that spot. When we look at the quarterbacks and we talk about, you know, the great quarterbacks, obviously we always are talking about Brady, and we look at those AFC on the AFC side, it's been Brady, Roethlisberger, Manning. The NFC side, there are great quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, but these guys aren't getting to the Super Bowl as often as those AFC quarterbacks. Is that parity or is it something else?
Well, I think what it is, a couple of the steadiest franchises in the league. Now Denver's kind of fallen on hard times, okay? But New England's the model of consistency. Pittsburgh is the model of consistency. They don't change coaches. They don't change quarterbacks. They make slight adjustments. They don't overly spend in free agency. I'll say that for the Packers as well. I know the Packers have not won the Super Bowl since 2010, but they just missed the playoffs for the first time in 9 years. You know, eight-year playoff run is still pretty substantial. So continuity is a very, very important part of this game, okay? The NFC stat you mentioned, by the way, it's not all losing records. Atlanta was 8-8, but it was funny. I tweeted that out last night, Jay, and I was greeted with, I was greeted by Packers fans and 49ers fans already guaranteeing that their team would be in the Super Bowl next year.
Hope springs eternal. Oh.
Well, listen, the league, you know this as well as I do. You know, we've seen five or six different playoff teams, like almost in an average, for more than a decade. Okay, this was an unusual year because we saw teams that we hadn't seen in the playoffs forever. Okay, I mean, you know, Jacksonville, the Rams, and the Bills were more than a decade. You know, and Tennessee was close. So, Well, I think what it shows you in this league is we talk still a lot about the quarterbacks. You know, they're the steadying force, but you better be pretty good overall. You look at the four teams that were the top four seeds, and three of them made it to the championship round. Pittsburgh didn't. But they all could win different ways. You know, some of them won with, you know, Minnesota and Philadelphia won with different quarterbacks, you know, during the year. Remember, Sam Bradford was the starter for the Vikings at the beginning of the year. Okay, and obviously Carson Wentz wound up going down. There's so many ways to skin a cat. I often like to remind people of a team going back almost 20 years ago, Jay. In three playoff games, they scored three offensive touchdowns total. Their defense and special team scored three touchdowns total. Okay, and that team won a Super Bowl. I mean, that'll blow you away if you think about it. That's not a lot of production.
No.
Their offense scored one offensive touchdown in each of their playoff games. They got support from the defense and special teams, and they won the Lombardi Trophy. That's pretty impressive.
It's not bad. The Vikings.
By the way, do you know what team that was?
Was it the Ravens?
No. And that's, you know, it's funny. That's the first guess I always get. No, it was the Tom Brady 2001 New England Patriots.
Yes.
And by the way, which was very fitting to see Drew Bledsoe yesterday, Patriot fans will recall that Tom Brady got hurt in the AFC Championship game that year, and it was Drew Bledsoe that led the team to their only offensive touchdown in that game. My point is, you can score umpteenth points and win a Super Bowl. You can do what Denver did 2 years ago, where they didn't have 200 yards of total offense, but they sacked Cam Newton six times and got a defensive touchdown. That's the beauty of this game. There is really no set format, okay? And, you know, that's what happened when the ball wasn't round.
Vikings in the Eagles game, going into that matchup, I didn't think we were going to see a blowout in that game, and certainly not a blowout by the Eagles, as I thought that the key difference between the two teams that I thought were very similar going into the game was Case Keenum and Nick Foles. And going into the divisional round, I said, all the Eagles need to do is Nick Foles to manage the game. And that's what he did. Going into this game, I don't think you can ask Nick Foles to do more than that. And because he can't do that, they're going to lose. And lo and behold, Nick Foles goes and outdoes himself and actually does perform at an extremely high level, and the Vikings are sort of left, you know, was it a hangover from the way that they won the game the previous week? I mean, what happened to the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, I think there's probably a degree of that, a little bit of a letdown emotionally and so on. But I will say, and I didn't realize this number until it was brought to my attention yesterday, when Case Keenum threw that pick six, it was the first touchdown allowed by the offense all year. In other words, they didn't have a fumble return against them. They didn't have an inner pick six against them. Okay? And for whatever reason, even though that just tied the score at 7-7, because remember, Minnesota went right down the field with the opening drive, It seemed to rattle and unnerve the Minnesota Vikings. And I'm not sure why. Maybe because they were in a hostile environment. Maybe because they lost Xavier Rhodes for a little bit. And Nick Foles made, I mean, that play off the flea flicker, you want to talk about dropping a ball into the right into somebody's hands. That was absolutely sensational. But they look shell-shocked by that. And give credit to where credit's due with Philly. They were very balanced. They were very confident. You know, as good as Minnesota's defensive line is, I think certain aspects of Philadelphia's defensive line is better because it's deeper. They got on Case Keenum's case, no pun intended, but pun intended if you want it that way. And he turned over the ball three times. And it was weird because it was a team all year, Jay, that didn't depend on any one person. And yet yesterday, it's almost like the Minnesota Vikings played as if all their hopes relied on Case Keenum. Maybe because they got set back on their heels. And, you know, 14-7, 21-7. Okay? We didn't see that with the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, they only lost three games before that. And it wasn't like they were manhandled in any of those games. Okay? So it was maybe it was a simple case of being put into a position where they had not been in all year.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles came out and they just punched him in the mouth and didn't stop punching right to the end of the game. And Foles had an extremely great game. Now the question is, can he recreate that magic against the Patriots? The Patriots, who are going to be facing a team, which it looks like, you know, very similar style as the Titans and the Jaguars that they've already seen. It's almost as if, I don't want to say, I'm not going to use the easiest path line, but it's almost as if.
I wouldn't recommend it because I think that's a backhanded slap.
But it is sort of coincidental and nice that their preparation will be very similar to what it's been the last 2 weeks.
Right. Well, there's an air of familiarity to it, even though Doug Peterson, it's his second year as the Eagles head coach. We know where that pedigree comes from. It comes from Andy Reid, who obviously Bill Belichick faced in the Super Bowl 13 years ago. But those pesky Chiefs, even though their season ended early, always seems to give Bill Belichick and the Patriots a lot. So I would imagine, just like you and I are doing this, I would imagine someone getting a podcast invite from Philadelphia to Kansas City sometime this week.
Interesting. Russell, where can people find you?
I don't want to reveal that because never mind. on Twitter, Vax Football Guru, as you alluded to, if you like football and you follow me, I do a lot of writing and I tweet all that writing out. So I recommend you do that. But my website is profootballguru.com, a Facebook page called Pro Football Guru, Instagram Pro Football Guru, working on Pro Football Guru, the detergent, and I can already guarantee you there will be no pods involved.
Oh, excellent.
This is let's put it this way. This is the only pod I'm doing.
There you go. Russell, thanks so much for joining me on the show. Appreciate it. And, hopefully we get to talk again down the road.
Absolutely. Call me back in 20 minutes, Jay. We'll do it all over again.
Listen, I don't ever want to hear that I am a biased homer for the New England Patriots ever, because I go out of my way to make sure we provide balanced coverage on this podcast. And so it is with great pleasure that I bring in the host of the Ring Rust Radio podcast, a very popular wrestling podcast. He is also a writer at Bleacher Report, and he is also a big-time Philadelphia Eagles fan, Donnie Wood. Donnie, welcome to the Next Fan Up show.
I'm so excited to be here. I love the show, but me being here doesn't make you less biased.
Listen, don't try and run ramshod through my logic. It was well thought out.
It's like a Minnesota Vikings defender. I'm running train. That's what I do.
Oh, or was it like a Minnesota Vikings fan who, you know, was welcomed with open arms in the city of brotherly love?
If you wear an opponent's jersey into our building, I can't help you. You can come and root for the Vikings. Just wear green and pretend you're an Eagles fan to get into the building, get to your seats, you know, expose the Vikings jersey. You will have, you know, you will be accosted. I'll say that in the nicest way possible. It's just not a good look to, you know, show up at our building in someone else's colors. It's not good. You know what I mean?
It's not good in any town, quite frankly. And the fact that this story keeps becoming bigger and bigger, it's beyond ludicrous, because it doesn't just happen in Philadelphia. It happens everywhere. Like, if as a Patriots fan, I cannot walk into MetLife, the Met in New York, and root for the Patriots in the Jets' home stadium. I'm not going to walk out of there without a black eye.
Well, and that's the thing. Most of the people who you see who did those videos, they didn't get punched or anything. It's just a line of human beings just telling you to F off, constantly flipping you off. And it's just, most times, unless you give it back and try to get into an altercation, and that's for any drunk person in any situation. If they're saying F you and they're drunk and you're like, well, you know what, F you back, well, then maybe you're going to get into some trouble. Right. But this is the NFL. The fan bases in the NFL are arguably the most diehard in the world, sans college football. But people want to defend their team. And in Philadelphia, we take great pride in being that crowd. So when these videos go, you're just adding to the aura that is us being jerks. So right. We're okay with it.
Yeah, you guys once booed and threw batteries at Santa Claus.
Okay, we booed and threw snowballs at Santa Claus. We threw batteries at Dallas Cowboys team members, okay? Yes, we did cheer for Michael Irvin's injury. And yes, was that horrible in retrospect? Yes. But we have good in our hearts.
Sure. That's what they all say. So Donnie, where did your love of the Philadelphia Eagles come from? How did you become a fan of the team that wears green that's not in New York?
I live right outside of Philadelphia. I have my whole life. I'm right on the cusp of South Philadelphia. It's ingrained. It's when you live in this area, unless you are trying to go against the grain, you are an Eagles fan. And, you know, the best part now about a successful Eagles team is all the years we've gone through where they're bad. I know some people, quote unquote, some people like you do not understand what it's like to have a losing team for long stretches of time. Okay.
Oh, I know.
You liked it with the Bledsoe time and before that, but I'm saying modern Patriots fans, the Patriots
like
fans we
son.
See now who are, well, no, because no, he's young. He has a reason. I'm talking about the 31-year-old guy who never had a dog in the fight. But ever since Brady got winning, he's like, yeah, man, where are you from? I'm from Kentucky. It's like, why do you like the Patriots? It's like, because they win. It's like, okay, at least you're honest. At least you're honest with yourself. But no, I've liked the Eagles since they won. It's like when you like the Phillies or any other team that's just terrible for such a long time. But you're there for the ride. And that makes the highs even higher, and it also makes the lows even lower, to be fair.
Listen, I had it even tougher because I was born in Connecticut, which is one of the six New England states. And as I was told by my father, you root for the home team, and my team was the New England Patriots. But most of Connecticut thinks it's just an annex of New York. So they all root for the Giants and the Jets in this stupid state, which drives me nuts. But I lived through the hard times. I've been a fan since 1984. So while, yes, the Patriots made a Super Bowl in 85, they also got crushed by the Bears. And then they sucked for a very, 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 very long time until my boy Drew Bledsoe came to the team and saved the franchise.
Did you hear me?
Well, listen, it's the same for you. Your number one draft choice, Carson Wentz, has saved your franchise.
Oh, listen, Carson City, Wentzylvania, is now a real place. I'm putting it on the map. Should have been MVP this year. Will be next year. But no, it's an exciting time to be an Eagles fan because we have gone through. I mean, McNabb was our guy. He did great for us. I mean, you look at poop play calling from Andy Reid that could have changed the outcome of literally Super Bowl 2004, as you know very well, and several NFC championship games that we lost for no good reason. So it's a new age, and that's one of the reasons why we are so excited, because it's new with Carson Wentz and Peterson. So we have a new regime, a new quarterback coach combination that could be, you know, leading us into the future. And it's a very fun time to be an Eagles fan.
Now, I don't want to go too far ahead, but you guys sort of did mortgage a lot of your future for the now. You don't have a lot of draft picks in the the next couple of years here.
Okay, this is going to probably stun you, but when Nick Foles goes ahead and he beats Tom Brady in 2 weeks at the Super Bowl, he's going to enter next season as the backup to Carson Wentz. Super Bowl winning quarterback, backup, ending training camp. Guess what? Drew Rosenhaus, he's no fool. He will trade him. We're going to get those picks back. Don't you worry. Somebody's going to get a Super Bowl winning quarterback next year. Maybe it's going to be New England. Because they realize, like, oh my God, if we can't beat him, we might as well have him join us.
Oh, that's too funny. No, when Brady retires after his sixth Super Bowl victory, it'll be Alex Smith we'll be inviting up to New England, not enjoy. Nick Foles.
I just cheering you with a champagne glass, saying enjoy.
All right, so you've been rooting for the Eagles your entire life. You were born into it. You didn't have a choice, which is fine. I can't fault you for that. Same goes for me. But you sort of hinted at it there. You didn't hint at it. You came straight out and said it. You really think that the Eagles have a shot against the Patriots in a couple of weeks here?
Absolutely. I think if you're truly unbiased, you're going to look at this New England team and realize this is not one of the better championship teams that they've had. They are in the Super Bowl again, but I don't think this is anywhere near some of the other teams they've had when they went to the Super Bowl, including the loss against New York. So I think now of any time, the Eagles truly can beat Tom Brady and the Patriots. Our defense has been lights out. Eli Manning, week 15, he threw 434, three touchdowns against us. We won that game, which is one of the reasons why we are in the position we are, because we won those close games where a couple years ago we would have lost that game. But since the defense got lit up that week, they have not let up. They've let up less than 9 points a game since then. Our defense right now is the best in the league. And you look at Minnesota, their defense was legitimately number one in terms of points per game given up. And we trounced them. We went to town on them, and it was great. And we're going to do the same thing to New England.
Well, a couple things there. One, the irony of being a Patriots fan is that that one of those Super Bowl losses that you mentioned to the New York Giants, people talk about it all the time, was arguably the best Patriots team ever, maybe even the best team of all time. And then somehow, ironically, they didn't play the Super Bowl that year, so they didn't finish a perfect season. I don't know why they canceled the Super Bowl that year.
I must have lost coverage. New England lost coverage about once there was a football on a helmet. I remember there was a football on a helmet or something like that, and then all of a sudden everybody at New England started kicking TVs.
Yeah, they show that highlight all the time. I don't know what game that came from. I mean, and what's really funny about this computer generated image of Rodney Harrison, one of the greatest safeties of all time, hanging off that arm, and that ball doesn't move off of a helmet, a slippery surf. Like, it's just an odd computer generated image. Anyway, but in terms of this particular game, the Patriots have seen your offense three straight games now, the Jaguars, the Titans, this run pass option that's all the rage all of a sudden. Patriots are better prepared for this game than in any of the Super Bowls that they've gone into, because they've seen this offense already numerous times, not only just in the playoffs. I mentioned the last two games, but they've been playing against it all season long.
You look at the run pass option, and while that is definitely a basis of what Foles had been doing since he took over for Wentz and the injury, this week against Minnesota, you saw considerably less of this, and you saw a lot more of Foles winging the ball. He was working both in the quick slants. He was cutting the ball across the middle of the field, and he was throwing it deep and opening up his running game, opening up his shorter options, and hitting a bunch of deep balls as well. So I think that the idea of it's a run pass option was more of when he's getting his feet underneath him as the commander of this offense. Again, he didn't have a training camp. He was injured during training camp. So he didn't have those snaps with these guys, even in the preseason. So I like what Zach Ertz said leading into the game with Minnesota. He's like, for the first time, we as an offense feel comfortable with Nick Foles as our quarterback. And I think that speaks volumes, because just 2 or 3 days later, you know, we did to Minnesota what we did, and what we're going to do to a very piss poor, I'll say it now, piss poor defense from New England. I said it. I mean it too.
Yeah. It's interesting because New England, if you took out the first 4 weeks of the season, and of course we know you can't, but if you,
you did,
the Patriots would actually be the number one defense in terms of points allowed. So as poor as you might think that they are, that the narrative might lead you to believe, they're really not that bad. And, you know, last week, you know, they decided that this is the thing that Belichick likes to do. The narrative dictates this as well. Belichick is going to take away the thing that you do best. And honestly, as I look at this game, I think that Patriots are looking at Mr. Ajayi and Mr. Blunt, whom, by the way, they know very well. And those are going to be the guys they're going to take out. And they're going to say, okay, Nick Foles, you did it once, but we don't believe you're going to do it again. And I actually don't think he can do it again. I don't see any way Nick Foles can recreate the perfect game that he had against Minnesota in Minnesota.
He doesn't have to. He does not have to. He has to be just good. And that's the thing. I think that like any other good Super Bowl, these two teams are going to come in and they're just going to, it's going to be smash mouth football. They're going to go head to head. It's going to be won and lost by the defenses on both sides. I think that the Philadelphia Eagles defense can shut down a lot of the, whatever you call their quote unquote run game, the flat passes to Deion Lewis and stuff like that and James White. And I think that they're going to force New England to do their cross and Brandon Cooks isn't going to have much on the outside, and you're going to have guys coming up. Malcolm Jenkins is going to be all over the middle of the field. So all your little receivers, they're going to be hit, and they're going to be hit early and often. So I think our defense can control your offense, and in terms of your defense, I think you're going to attempt to stop the run game. But I think Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount, you're right, LeGarrette Blount, they know him, and he knows them, and he knows where they're weakest, and he's telling everybody like, hey, run towards the left. He's a Jay Brown over here, and it's like, boom, we're going to hit that spot. And what you're going to do is you're going to put Nick Foles in a position to not have to win the game, but have to manage the game. And at the end, if he has to win the game, as we saw last week, he does have the skill level to do so. So maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's not going to have a perfect game, which I definitely do not believe he will. But I do believe he will be able to shine in a moment where he is needed the most.
So going into the first matchup against the Falcons, what you just said, I said what absolutely was true for the Eagles. To beat the Falcons, they needed Foles to be a game manager. Going into last week, I said, you've already asked Foles to do the most that he can do, that he's capable of doing, and that's being a game manager. And as a game manager, there's no way he's going to beat the Vikings. I have too much trust in what Case Keenum can do. Case Keenum can go out and do more than just be a game manager. And of course, that turned out to be the exact opposite.
But why? Why did Case Keenum fail?
Well, and that's the question. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Russell Baxter brought up right before I started talking with you. And that pick six was his first pick six, the first touchdown the offense had given up all year long. And but as soon as that happened, they got rattled and they had to rely on Case Keenum. They couldn't rely on Case Keenum. Here's the thing. The Patriots, not only do they rely on Tom Brady, they have to rely on Tom Brady. They can rely on Tom Brady. And it doesn't matter if you're up 28-3 or if you're up 17-0 with only the fourth quarter left. Tom Brady's going to beat you. There's no lead that you will ever feel comfortable with knowing that Tom Brady is still quarterbacking the New England Patriots.
Wholeheartedly agree, but you talk about that pick six from Case Keenum. What caused that pick six? It was a pass rusher getting his hand up and in to deflect the pass just enough for someone to grip it up and run it back, correct?
Maybe. I don't pay that much attention.
Spoiler alert, it was. So one thing I compare Minnesota and New England very closely is their offensive line. I think New England's offensive line is overrated. I don't think it's that good. I don't think many people rate it very highly, but even the people who rate it highly, I think that's too high. Because I think what you're going to do is what the strength of the Eagles defense is, it's not the secondary. Yes, Malcolm Jenkins is good. The cornerbacks are solid. The linebackers are good. Our strength is in the defensive line. Fletcher Cox, Bo Allen, you have Vinnie Curry. Brandon Graham. You have all these awesome pass rushers. Barnett, our rookie. These guys, and they come in on rotation, and it's nonstop. It's not the thing where, okay, after four quarters, they're worn down. In the fourth quarter, that's when they're doing their most damage. These are the guys who are wearing down the offensive line. Tom Brady is a stationary quarterback, and he will be stationary for several guys looking to strip sack him. I think that he is too good at his job to be rattled by it like Case Keenum will be, but being rattled and being rushed are two entirely different things, and I think he will be rushed and pressured and sacked all game long.
See, but you mentioned it. They'll be able to get the pressure on him, but will those linebackers and will that okay secondary be enough to shut down those quick options that he's going to be able to throw to, those quick passes out to Deion Lewis, those quick passes to Danny Amendola over the middle? Oh, by the way, Gronk might be in concussion protocol now, but I guarantee he will be out of concussion protocol by the time the Super Bowl kicks off. So unless Malcolm Jenkins or one of your other dirty players is going to try and pull the same thing as Barry Church. And by the way, I understand Barry Church did not have a dirty play.
You're just slandering a great person. He's actually like a legitimate, I think he's a Walter Payton Award winner. Man's a good guy.
Listen, it's just fun to say. But unless one of your guys decides to go headhunting on Gronk and knock him out, like the Jaguars did, even then, Tom's like, oh, you're going to take away Gronk from me? No problem. I still got all these other guys I can throw to.
You're not going to find a team that is successful with a tight end against the Eagles very much. We do well against tight ends. We have shut them down from listen, a guy like Gronk is going to get his touches. You know, and he's going to get his catches. He is a freak anomaly. He is good at one thing, and it's getting out there and catching balls in traffic and making plays. That's what he does. So it's that guy. You're not hoping to stop him. You're hoping to contain him. But with that said, we have a good set of sideline to sideline running back or middle linebackers like Michael Kendricks, a guy who's very underrated in the middle, who will be all over these middle of the field plays. New England is going to get there. Their love. They're going to, if you can hold them to, you know, six yards an attempt passing, that's, then you've won, you can win that game because you can march down the field all you want. But again, you're tiring your own offense out and you're giving the Eagles defense more and more chances to turn the ball over. And you know what? Like, we saw it with Minnesota, that first opening drive of the game against Philadelphia in the NFC Championship, they marched the ball down the field like soldiers. Every bop, bop, bop. And Jim Johnson, the old defensive coordinator for the Eagles, he said, Ben, don't break. And that is what the Eagles defense has done all year. And I think Tom Brady's the kind of guy who's going to score points. He's very talented. The key is keep minimizing his effectiveness by increasing the rush and getting in his head, forcing him to make those quick passes. Don't let Brandon Cooks loose, because if you do, then that takes the top off the offense and it's a completely different animal. Stopping the run, stopping the deep pass, let them have all these short passes. Let them nickel and dime you to death, because I feel our offense and our defense can withstand that.
Well, I'm hoping and sort of expecting to see the Patriots finally blow out an opponent in the Super Bowl. Probably won't happen because they don't do that in any Super Bowl that they've won. I mean, the biggest margin of victory was 6. That was last year, and it took overtime to do it. So they probably won't blow them out. I'm hoping that they do, but they're not. But I am not concerned. Honestly, out of all of the opponents that the Patriots could have faced out of the NFC, I think they got the weakest one, even though you guys proved that you're not, because you're in the Super Bowl and those other teams aren't.
So what you just said right there is what the Philadelphia Eagles have thrived on since Carson went down injured. We are the biggest Super Bowl underdog since 2009.
I know,
and that is the way this team has won. When we were at home against Atlanta, everyone picked against us, and they started wearing those dog heads, and the underdog situation, the mentality began. Last week at home against Minnesota, no one gave us a chance. Everybody was against us. And boom, this team comes together and they play like they did in the Super Bowl. You don't think every person in that Philadelphia Eagles locker room is like, We're the biggest underdog since 2009. Everyone thinks we're going to get blown out. We have one game left to play. Let's go prove ourselves. A lot of the guys in New England's locker room, they've won before. They don't even have – I'm sure they have the drive because you always want to win. But these guys – we can't compare the drive. The drive of the Patriots is, hey, a lot of us have been here before. Let's get back to work. We know what we're doing. Let's not worry. Let's not think of it like any other game. This is just, you know, A, B, and C. This is week 13 all over again. But the Eagles – it's a completely different mentality. They're on borrowed time. No one expected us to even get this far because of Wentz going down. So it's a completely different dynamic. And I think that you guys can say all you want. I think the difference maker is going to be Jay Ajayi. He is here. He came from a losing team. He is absolutely having fun. The whole team is having fun. You can say what you want about the Eagles, but they are having fun playing football. And with the mentality that we're the underdogs and we're going against it, and they're going to – and, you know, Jay Ajayi, he knows the Patriots pretty well, too. He played you guys twice a year. He knows what you guys can do. He's probably watched a lot of those games on the sidelines because usually the Dolphins are passing a lot in those games. But to be fair, he's going to enjoy this. I think that everybody will be super motivated from the Eagles with a little bit – the New England Patriots will be motivated as well. That's not a question. It's that extra motivation of being basically disrespected. The Eagles have faced disrespect week after week in terms of being the underdogs. Even though we're home, we're the best team in the NFC. Underdog, underdog. In the Super Bowl, the biggest underdog since 2009. And that is going to be a huge driving force.
Trust me, this is a very recognizable storyline. I recall in 2001, a team losing their franchise quarterback, some sixth round draft choice came in, played hard all season long. No one gave him a chance. And then the day after the Super Bowl against the greatest show on turf, the headline read Silence of the Rams. So I recognize this storyline. It is very recognizable.
Wouldn't it be ironic, too? Just poetic justice if it comes full circle and Brady is forced to retire? Like he goes out on his shield at the hands of a man who did the same thing he once did.
No, see, honestly, I think it's in the NFL's best interest for everyone to root for Brady to get the sixth one so that he can say, all right, good night. I got nothing left to prove. It's over. See you later. If he loses, he goes, oh, no, I ain't going out like this. I got another one in me. Let's do it.
No, to me, it is good for everybody and everybody to be like, this is best for business. You right now, you're being the authority in WWE. You're saying this is best for business that New England wins. Well, guess what? The Philadelphia Eagles are the Daniel Bryan of NFL, and we are going to overcome the odds, and we're going to win the championship, and it really doesn't matter what Tom Brady does because he will be number two coming out of this game. You know that hurts. Oh, that hurts on two different sports levels.
It really does. The only thing to remember is that Daniel Bryan had to retire after that. he didn't get to enjoy that for very long.
I don't care. He won the title. And that is really, at the end of the day, the record books always say that I get my damn parade. And that's all that matters. I just want to go to a parade.
Well, you can come up to Boston. They're very good at throwing them out.
I'll come up with an Eagles jersey and just stand in a line as they try to fist fight me.
Now, I had suggested that we try and put a little wager on this, a little something fun, nothing that's going to cost us any money, but maybe, you know, a little something our show does something for your show. And one of my super fans suggested that we dress up like Nacho Libre and do a video promoting the other show. My wife immediately deleted that idea, but I thought it was funny. I'm not against it.
I have my Lucha mask out. I have it on my desk at all times. So I already have the Lucha mask.
But here's what I'm willing to do. And of course, I'm gambling with assets that aren't really mine. But here's what I'm willing to do. I'm willing, if your team wins, podcast.
Sorry, and I hate to correct you there. It's going to be when you misspoke.
your podcast will reside in the number one spot on blogtalkradio.com for the entirety of February.
Okay.
That said, when my team wins, to correct you, we would like to have multiple mentions of the next Fan Up podcast on the Ring Rust radio program.
I will do a full, how about this? I will do a full on live read for your show for 2 months.
Nice.
2 months. I'm
down with
like
it.
Like I said, being on the front page, that's a big deal. And I love that. And we would really appreciate that. But for 2 months, I will do a live read for your show on the show every week.
You know what? I will give you 2 months too. And if okay. anyone call and if anyone calls on calls me on it, well, I'm the vice president and head of content. So
okay, great. So when I lose my connection to Blog Talk Radio because they're like, hey Jay Brone, why are you doing this? Like it's a podcast thing. I made a bet.
That's not gonna happen. All right. So where can people find you, my friend? And by the way, wrestling, I mean we didn't even get a chance to talk about wrestling. Raw 25 happened this week, which was a fun nostalgic show for sure, but beyond the nostalgia there wasn't really much other than that.
There was a lot of old people there. I'll give it that. This is like the nicest thing I think I could say. The Stone Cold segment was pretty damn good. I like that one.
Yeah, the DX reunion I thought was a little lame.
It was rushed. Everything was so God, it was so bad. They just it did not. When you look at Raw 1000 and then Raw the 25th anniversary, it's night and day. One was so enjoyable from front to back. So many great moments happened. But again, I think you should expect that because when you look at Raw, it was a go home episode for the Royal Rumble. So there's not much you could do from a storyline perspective because it's just wait and see at this point.
Right. Well, the Royal Rumble, speaking of which, you've got a special episode coming up.
Yeah, so basically what we're doing is we're doing Ring Rust Radio Live. We're doing it from a bar in Philadelphia. This is only our second ever live episode of the show. It's at Lorraine Bar in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Sunday, January 28th, 2 to 4 p.m. So if you're in Philadelphia for the Rumble or you're just in Philadelphia in general, come out, hang out, have a few beers. I know $2 beers, $3 well drinks. So come watch, and we're going to watch the Royal Rumble after. Some of us are going to the actual show. I refuse because I think Roman Reigns is going to win the Royal Rumble, and I will not give Vince McMahon my money for that. But I will be there Saturday for NXT. So he got some of my money.
Why Roman? Why?
Because there's a chance it's not him. Shinsuke Nakamura could win, Finn Balor. There's other options. Even Randy Orton, I think, is at this point a better option, but I wouldn't like that either. But Roman Reigns lost the IC title last night. The rumor has always been that he's going to fight Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania. So, you know, I mean, the writings, when Brock retains in that triple threat and Roman wins the Rumble, there's the match we've been talking about for months.
That's a mistake, too. It's funny when you talk to these wrestling guys, they're like, oh, we got to build the character, you know, Braun Strowman. You've already built Braun Strowman up. What more do you have to do to make him? You have to make him Daniel Bryan before you put the belt around him. Like what else do you have to do? The man pulled down a scaffolding on top of two other men
with a grappling hook. By the way, he found a random grappling hook. That's my favorite part of that whole segment. He's just like, "What's this? A grappling? You're gonna catch these hands?" And he just throws the grappling hook. But no, I think that a guy like him doesn't need the title. You really don't need to put a title on Braun Strowman. He's already arguably the person who's most over in the company, who's there every week right now because Cena's not around, Undertaker, those guys aren't there. When he comes out, it's a huge reaction every time, and when he does his bit, it's huge. Eventually, you're going to need to put a title on him to give him legitimacy. But Undertaker, in all the years he's been there, almost 30 years of wrestling, he's been world champion 4 times. It's because he doesn't need it. Undertaker doesn't need a championship because Undertaker has that aura. Undertaker has that aura of invincibility. And I feel like Braun Strowman, if they continue to book him that well, he will have something similar. He will never have the dead man aura, but he has something special. He is that big man. He doesn't need the title always, but he needs it sometimes.
You're right. See, I come from a different era. I come from the Hulk Hogan era where your best guy wears the belt forever. And that's it. I guess I'm old.
Yeah, that was not a good era, though. I mean, you go back to my dad. My dad's old like you, too. He saw Bruno Sammartino, and he was just like years and years of the same guy as champion. In today's modern age where people are on a website for 25 seconds before clicking to the next, I need a little more hype. I need a little more change. That's why we've had Brock for, you know, since last WrestleMania at this point. So he's going to go full year as the champion. and it's just to get over Roman Reigns as the guy who finally beat him.
Still, I'm proud of my kids because they always note things like, you know, John Cena, 16-time world champion. And my son goes, well, that just means he lost the belt 16 times, too.
Yeah, I mean, but you look at the same thing with Ric Flair. He lost the title, but that's part of the game, too. And I think that doesn't define the number of titles doesn't define how great of a superstar you are. Look at Macho Man. He didn't have nearly as many world titles as a lot of the guys you'd consider top superstars. But that doesn't discount his, you know, impact on the business, his charisma, his in-ring ability. So I think that it's an easy way to skew people to be like, wow, I'm impressed by him.
Yeah, AJ's Macho Man impersonation with Mean Gene was also subpar.
AJ has gorgeous hair. I'm just going to leave it at that. And I think that's enough for me.
I still chant soccer mom when I go to these events.
He's got L'Oreal hair. Like, he just needs to be on one of those front covers, like with just a little bit of wind blowing, and he just tosses it to the side, and he's like, Infinity by AJ. Just like something like that. I would be down for all that.
I tell you what, there is a Raw coming to Hartford that I will be at, and I have a key television seat. So maybe I put Ring Rust Radio on a sign.
Yeah. You will get the sign taken away. You can't have promotional things like that. You can put Ring Rust with exclamation point. That would be totally okay. Because
I see promotional signs all the time. What are you talking about?
They get taken away almost immediately. And usually those people, because it depends on the place. I know in Philadelphia, they actually have people who screen signs.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's because WWE knows better. Because they know there's just going to be, someone's going to come with a sign with a wiener drawn on it and be like, oh my God, like, why did we let that through? It's Philadelphia. We should have known better.
Oh, well, I'll just bring a marker and I'll make a sign and then they can take it away.
Okay, there you go. That's a great plan. That sounds like you're really going to get the most out of this adventure to the stadium, the arena with your family.
Well, as long as they don't remove me, go ahead, take my sign. I'm okay with that.
WWE does know Ring Rust Radio, and knowing how they feel about us, you may get thrown out. You may get taken out in one of those crazy people coats.
All right. Well, then maybe I'll just make a sign for Next Fan Up instead.
There you go. Honestly, that's probably a better idea. I think just worry about you. I don't feel like being responsible. I don't feel like getting a call late at night and be like, yo, can you come bail me out because your stupid sign got me ruined?
Booing Roman Reigns, cheering Braun Strowman, Next Fan Up.
It works. Rolls off the tongue. It's beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Did we mention all the places you can find you? Bleacher Report, Ring Rust Radio Podcast. What's the Twitter?
I am at Donald_Wood. And remember, find me Sunday, January 28th, Lorraine Bar in Philly. It's going to be a really good time.
Donnie, thanks for coming on the show and admitting your team is going to lose. Oh, you never did that.
I never would either.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I absolutely love the show. Thank you so much.
All right. I don't want to say I saved the best for last, but, you know, Russell Baxter was great. Donnie Wood was great. But Matt Chatham, I saved the best for last. I mean, let's face it. I'm a Patriots fan. You're a former Patriots player. You played for some other team, too, but we forget about that.
You do.
And, you know, this is our time.
Yeah, it's our time. And I like that you say it that way, because I can, you know, I laugh about this because I can even see it in friends and former teammates and other guys I know around the league who are normally very tolerant, very complimentary, very objective, very, you know, they're not pro Patriots, but I think some of my circle of friends in the NFL are guys who, you know, acknowledge the brilliance of what's going on during the regular season. But as things get in the way, you know, sort of the torrent of inevitability starts to happen here with them down the stretch, I feel even some of my old, usually more tolerant guys starting to feel, oh, this again, you know, like it's just the our time thing that you mentioned. There is a sense, not necessarily of, you know, 31 other markets hating the Patriots. I know there's a bunch that do, But I think part of it is this our time thing that, okay, why are we making Jaws 17? Can we make a new movie? I really feel like there's people out there that just don't want to see this movie again. Yeah, we respect you, but will you go away? But no, the Patriots will not go away. As you mentioned, our time again.
Well, it's funny because even in those dynasties of old, the Cowboys, the Steelers, yep. I'm even going to throw the Bills in there. The Bills going to four straight Super Bowls.
Nuts.
I think it's more of the fact that Brady has been in a Super Bowl for 50% of his career. 50% of his starting career, he's gone to a Super Bowl. That's insane. That's not supposed to happen.
It's insane. It doesn't make sense. I think there's so many. This happens to me all the time, Jad. And I it sounds too old guyish every time I mention things like this. But every single time some sort of stat or some sort of way to, you know, a percentage based of been to Super Bowls or how many other people have come and gone, any kind of these little data points that people throw out there, it's put into perspective for me because of the people that have come and gone. Guys like Mike Vrabel. Like, I remember Vrabes was a young guy on a team. He played a couple years, a few years or whatever in Pittsburgh, came to us in 2001. That's Brady's first start. You know, that's Brady's first big moment. And he had a little son, Tyler, at the time that was a nugget, you know, that would come on the field with us and was just, you know, a little boy. He's now a recruit, an offensive lineman recruit for Boston College. And Mike Vrabel's a head coach in the NFL. You know, and Tom Brady is still playing. Like, this doesn't make sense. There are so many little examples like that, just little anecdotes. And you know, again, I'm a guy over 40. Brady's birthday's, you know, like, I think we're like 6 months off each other. I'm just a little bit older than him. I've got, you know, friends that are our age that have long since, you know, played, the guys that played 10 year careers that have been done for 10 years, you know, on the other, and Brady's still playing. It's just all those little things out there that help you go, you find new ways each and every day to go, wow, you know, that's what it's like, you know, following Brady and this Patriots team.
It's funny too, because having just spoke to Donnie Wood, he's the host of the Ring Rust Radio wrestling program and a big Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Yep.
You know, he was talking about the Eagles this year, and I'm like, dude, I recognize this story. It's a very... Yeah. It's a very popular story. Back in 2001, I remember this scrappy team with a backup quarterback that didn't have a chance against the greatest show on turf. And the next day, the headlines read Silence of the Rams. So I know this story. I recognize it. I see it. I don't like that I'm on the other side of it.
You know, the funny thing about this one this year, Pod, and I think this helps the Patriots. They are not the greatest show on turf. This offense has been good. It's been one of the better ones in the league, but they've grinded out. This is not what I think we thought in the offseason. You know, there is no Malcolm Mitchell. There was Chris Hogan was only healthy for part of the years. You lose Julian Edelman. You lose your, you know, all pro-ish, you know, Pro Bowl quality tackle in Marcus Cannon. You lose Rex Burkhead, which is supposed to be this big helpful element, twice during the season. He goes down with injury. The games where he's been full speed have been some of their more gangbuster games. There's just been a lot of pieces missing with this offense, and it's good. It's good enough. You know, with the guy at the top of it, they're efficient. They're going to figure it out. They're going to get close to their 30 per game. But, you know, in going back and reviewing this game for my own Real Thing Patriots podcast thing, we fly through the AFC Championship game. The Jags, I thought, were an overrated defense. Very good, good, very good. But I thought the historical context or trying to slot them with other groups was way overstated. I thought Pittsburgh proved that they weren't in that class. I think even just the Niners a few weeks before that weren't in that class. And I say that, and the Patriots had a grinded out day with them. A lot of missed opportunities, I thought, earlier in the game. You know, a lot of bad drives just were, you know, they just weren't very efficient. They weren't very productive with, I think, the opportunities that were there. So I say that just as a matter of context, where this offense, they can get it done. They'll grind them away to 30 as opposed to blowing their way to 30, if that makes any sense. So I don't feel like the narrative fits them as much on their half of it, because they feel like they're pretty gritty too. You know, it's not, this is not, you know, the Marts, OC kind of feel, and how many different creative ways can they get to 100 or get to 500 yards of offense, that kind of thing. This is different, and they've got to be creative. They've got to be efficient. There's going to be days where it's more run game than pass. You just don't know where it's going to come from. But I think that makes it more where it's actually two grinders going against one another.
Well, as I compare the Eagles to the Patriots, I will now steal an Eagles comparison for the Patriots. And this team likes, I don't know if likes is the right word. I don't like watching it, but it feels like they go and pull the Rocky. They're going to lose in the first three rounds, and
right,
then they're going to come back hard in the fourth round to right, take it home. And they've been doing that a lot lately. Clearly, it's not by design, but it's nice that they're able to do that.
Yeah, and I would say the most impressive football for the Patriots for me of the day was the first drive short of the red zone. So they walked right down the field. You know, there was that very first drive where it's like, wow, you know, that's okay. As I thought from my field and study, there are holes in this zone and they are going to peck away at them. And they're just going to walk down the field. But then they stalled in the red zone and just get three out of that. And you know, I'm thinking, okay, they'll come back into it. And as you mentioned, there were a lot of bad offensive series, a lot of three and outs, a lot of just, you know, oddly throwing checkdowns into zones and little swing passes into zones. When you do that, yeah, the zone player, those are easier tackles to make. I could say there's a linebacker that's not the fastest, but if you're going to check down into a zone, I love that because I have a chance to rally. I know there's other people around me. There was a lot of that where it's like the offense just didn't get rolling until that fourth quarter, other than that first drive. Well, I take that back. The drive before half was solid, but there was just enough uneven play to where you're like, okay, are they always going to keep stressing themselves? And at some point, you know, it may become too much. You know, we don't know what will happen here in this Philly game. But I think this is the line that Belichick likes to use. And I think this is the first time it's true. When he said, you know, the Jags are the best team we've played this year, when he said that last week, I kind of went, you know, I mean, you have to play it that way. You have to frame it that way for the guys. Wasn't quite certain about that. I mean, it's close. Arguably, there's a few other, I think, contestants in that debate. But this is the week where it's true. Philly's the best team they played. Philly is going to be the best team they played this year, and they play them last. And I think that's cool, and that's how it should work out. And for Philly, exactly the same situation. They haven't played anyone like the Patriots yet, and this is going to be by and far and away their biggest challenge of the season. So it's good, and I like that it's that way for both teams. And I can also say that, you know, if the Patriots do some of the Miami Dolphins game stuff, or they do some of the 2.5 to 3-quarter stuff they get against the Jags, if they do some of the lull football that they do, they won't be able to get away with it against Philly. And I think that's important to note. So it gives Belichick some great ammo to go into the game and say, this truly is the best team you've played, and we can't have snooze quarters. We can't have, you know, two bad offensive series and two bad defensive series and a kick return hold all in a five chunk sequence there. You can't have that. It's too much of a lull. You'll get too far behind the eight ball with these guys.
You know, maybe it's my disrespect of Nick Foles, but I actually sort of disagree with you. I think the worst team in the NFC side of things came out of the playoffs here. I don't think the Eagles were the best team on the NFC side of the card. And in terms of this particular game, I feel like, unlike other years, the Patriots are best prepared to face this team because they've seen a similar style offense already 2 weeks in a row, on top of the fact that they've seen this offense numerous times through the season this year.
So the reason I'll sort of preface all my thoughts on why I think they're the best. I think they've got the best across the board personnel, and they're similarly versatile. They're a game plan team defensively and offensively. And I think that's very, very important. Why I don't hold the Jags in as high a regard is because they're not a game plan team. They run what they run. They run the defense they run. And if you happen to have an offense that can peck holes in it, you'll do great. If you don't, they'll kill you. And that's why I think they're similar to the Patriots, and that they've been really, really game plan heavy with some of the offensive stuff they've done. They've been in some slobber knockers of themselves where they were boring and pretty ineffective offensively. They've been in some games where, and this is even back to the Wentz stuff, where they're heavier run, other weeks heavier pass. The kinds of runs where they're more game plan heavy, where it's movement based and pullers and, you know, misdirection, or if they're just power scheme, or last week's game, they hit on several gadgets in the passing game. They hit on several shots. They hit on, you know, and then they hit on the intermediate stuff, and they can do screen game stuff a little bit as well if they get their third down back involved, which that's kind of their missing piece. But the reason I think they're most dangerous is they may not have the most exciting defense as far as like the stats. They're up there. They're a top five-ish kind of group. But I think they're super versatile, and I think that helps you. I don't think they're not married to one particular coverage scheme. They're not only front four only, you know, or front four only. It's not like that was a lot of the talk with the Jags. It's like, yes, they've got the great corners, but they play that coverage scheme that's more zone based, but they got to get after you with the front four. And then in those moments where they don't get after you in the front four, oh, you can pick away at the zone. I don't think if the front four gets blunted a bit, you know, if you start doing well against the Brandon Grahams and some of the other dudes up front, Linville Joseph, those guys, I still think that they're good enough in the linebacker crew and they're balanced enough on the back end with Malcolm Jenkins and the cornerbacks that aren't like super duper high level, but they're pretty competent, that it's more of a balanced group. So I tend to like favor those, because when you're going against balanced groups, it's not, if we take away this part of what you're doing, we're going to get at you. There's no like one thing they do particularly well. And I think go back to the offensive side of the ball as well. When we talk about, you know, you'll mention how great a running game is. When you mention the Jags, what's the first thing you think of? To me, it's Fournette. You know, right. You think of the specialist. I think when you think of Philly runs the football just as well, the Jags, maybe better at times. And it isn't because of their backs. It's their offensive line. Their O-line blocks really well. And again, they block varied schemes. They don't have to run the same stuff every week. So they're a little bit like the Pats, that I think there are weeks where the Pats offensive line doesn't do a lot and other weeks where they're huge. And you have to kind of respect them week in, week out, which you might get. But Lane Johnson's a mauler. He's a good one. Kelsey at the center can do a lot of different stuff. He's great out in space. Their guards are solid. They had to replace Peters at left tackle, but the fill-in's done okay there. I just think I respect them that they can do a lot of different stuff. So you don't kind of know week in, week out what you're going to go against. So that's probably why I put them a notch above. And I mentioned all that stuff, and it's completely independent of the quarterback. And I'm not saying that I don't think that's a huge vulnerability. I do believe it is one. But I think what makes this a fun week of prep, if you're a Patriot and you're playing there and part of that staff, is they're very up and down. And those are the groups the Patriots usually feast on. You know, they usually feel like there's some vulnerability there. One week they're scoring 10 points of offense. Next week they're 40, you know, or high 30s. So who's going to show up? And if we can put together the right plan, we can be on the low end of that.
Let's talk about some of the little stuff that us fans like to latch onto that probably doesn't mean a lot to the players. And so you can put me in my place as a fan. The white jerseys. How much of that is a head game? How much of that plays into going into this game? They're undefeated in the whites. Most of the teams that have played in their white jerseys have been winning the Super Bowls lately. How much of that is actual gamesmanship and just not even a second thought?
It's a great question, because it makes me sort of rack my peanut brain and just think back to like, how did that get decided when we did it? Was it just we rolled with who's home, who's away thing, and we're just going to wear the color we're going to wear? Or is the home team gets to make the choice? I know obviously for the three that I got to play in, those are all under glass. The first two are blues. The third one's white. The white is the one against the Eagles, obviously. I know that they then had the stretch where they lost some in blue again and then have been winning in white. So maybe the decision was just simply made. But I can tell you this. When Belichick in captain's meetings, I wasn't a captain of the Patriots, I was a captain of the Jets. So in captain's meetings, it was sort of this vet thing where Larry would go in as our captain representative in the special teams room, and they would have conversations about jerseys, like, what are we going to wear this week? And back in the day, we could make a choice. You know, the captains would say, hey, we're going to wear, let's do red tops, you know, let's do the throwbacks this week, or let's do blue on blue or gray on gray or all that kind of stuff. I don't know if they give them that discretion now, but it used to be, at least from our vets, we'd have some input. We'd say it to the captain go in, they'd advocate it for in captain's meetings. And then, you know, Bill would usually, I think, concede, other than that we lost to the Packers in blue on blue. And he flipped out about that had become too much of a talking point during the captain's meeting. We shouldn't care that much about the uniform. So I bring that up to say that I half imagine Bill doesn't really care. He doesn't give a rat's ass. And he might even get annoyed about having it be a topic. So I wonder if that choice of which color to wear even originated or even got to his desk. Maybe that was made front office wise, as far as maybe it's Mr. Kraft, or maybe it's equipment staff. Maybe it's back in our day, it was Donnie Brosher, who rest in peace is no longer with us. But, you know, sometimes I think their input might be as much as anything. They get an idea in their head, like you're saying, hey, we want him with this. Hey, coach, we cool with that? Yeah, whatever. Do what you got to do. So I don't know how much thought was put into that or whether it even gets to Belichick's desk, but he usually kind of shoos away conversations about what you're going to wear, unless it's equipment that can make a difference. You know, the kind of cleat you wear based upon the surface, what gloves you're wearing, if it's wet or outside or not, those kind of things he gets involved in. Whether or not it's white or blue, that usually kind of just pisses him off.
See, I'm a little disappointed because, you know, been rocking the blues now for about a month or so. It's been while since the Pats have had to wear white.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am happy that, you know, I'll get to wear my Drew Bledsoe on Super Bowl Sunday, but it's been a while since I've had to put the white on.
One of the things that I'll just say from a player perspective, if you get to play in that game, and you know we had the three Super Bowls I got to play in, one's on turf, so you have a blue kind of sweaty, wet, but it's just gonna have we don't have the beads back then. The New Orleans Super Bowl was on the old turf, the turf. Mm. So you might have a skid mark or two on there, but, you know, jersey doesn't get messed up. Then we play on grass in Houston and maybe get dirt. Yeah. It's going to be wet and sweaty and have some dirt stains on it a little bit. But when the white gets grass stains, outdoor field, played in Jacksonville, that's kind of cool because, you know, that's a fun one to put under glass. You don't wash it. You just kind of frame it, you know. So the white shows more. Like, it sort of has the battle scars on it, which is kind of neat. And sometimes they don't show through in blue. So, yeah, I kind of like it when you wear the white. I'd go another step and go white on white. And I hate the color rush stuff generally, but I think it looks kind of cool with their particular color combo. They're not going to do that, but, yeah.
How many jerseys do you guys get in the course of a season?
What they do now, I do not know, but back in our day, it was just a blue and a white, and then you just had the pants combination. So we had blue, gray, and I think we had a white pant, because the white pant is what would go with the throwback. So we got to wear that on with the snapping dude helmets from the 90s and 80s and all that stuff. We had the white pant with the red blue stripe on that I don't think they ever paired those with our regular home stuff, but you had three pairs.
Right before we started recording, we were talking about colds and it's the flu season. And I, at one point, made a big point about this, about in the playoffs, the silent killer oftentimes comes and rears its ugly head at the most inopportune times. I remember a playoff game in Indianapolis, where the silent killer affected my favorite team. Do you think the private jets of the New England Patriots will help them avoid the silent killer and is also an advantage against the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, I think one of the things that helps him here is it's already run through everyone's system. I don't know if you were aware of this or if it became a public thing, but there's been guys battling the little flu bug throughout the year. I'd say like your November, December, it was a few guys down a week. And this happens pretty typically on a football team. I mean, locker rooms are gross. They try their best to keep them clean, but it's sweaty gear. It's, you know, if there's one dude with a flu or cough or whatever, it spreads. You're touching each other all the time because you play a physical sport. I mean, your hands are on each other every day. I mean, I don't mean to make that sound weird, but it just is what it is. That's you're playing a physical sport where there's going to be touching, breathing. You're around each other in small rooms. If somebody gets sick, it passes pretty quickly. And guys get very sensitive about that. If somebody's got a flu, send them home. Get the hell out of here. You know, it's like your kids, like the kid, you know, somebody's got meningitis, you know, something crazy. You know, maybe not that over the top. But the point is, if you've got the one sick kid, you want to get them away from everyone else. And I think the Patriots kind of had their cycle already this year where whatever that was ran through the locker room and got a big chunk of the guys. So yeah, hopefully then your system's built up to beat it off and it doesn't hit you a second time, even with travel, I guess.
Now I assume you're heading off to Minnesota, but you alluded your former teammate before. Might you be heading to Nashville after?
No.
Come on, I want to break news here, Matt.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? No, I mean, I sent my congratulations, quick messages there, and I've always been it's something where if I would have made that decision a long time ago, I could be doing that kind of stuff now. But when I chose to get the MBA at Babson, right when I got done, and go do some business stuff independent of, you know, coaching and football, I kind of made that life decision. So I've been away from it 10 years. So for me in my 40s to get back into it, I could, I guess. It would never, in my view, probably be as a coach. The business angle for me is more appealing. You know, maybe one day be a general manager. You don't just get to say that on a podcast and make it become true. But, you know, I would have to go back and grind. I would have to go back in and go as a sort of a mentor kind of situation in an organization. And it's something that I have that conversation with my wife from time to time. You know, the evaluation, running a cap, you know, that's to me more applicable with having the MBA, even the game plan consulting and looking ahead at teams. And I think I could be an asset to an organization that way somehow. But I made some life decisions, some other stuff I wanted to do off the field and outside of football, and other ways to make money and be with my kids. And then, which allows me to do some of the media stuff here on the side as well. So I made that call, lost 10 years of my life doing it. And usually your grinders that are now risen, like the Vrabes, the amazing stuff he's done to rise as fast as he has. And my buddy, Larry Izzo, you know, becoming a special teams coordinator. I know he doesn't have a job right now, but you know, those, you know, I'm assuming he will again, but those guys, when they left the league, like I did, they went right into it. And I think that's generally what you have to do to stick with it. So if I wanted those kinds of things, I would have to go back and climb the ladder again. So I made that choice, so I got to live with it for now.
The AFC South becoming Patriot-led with Rabes now in Nashville and Billy O'Brien in Houston, and the rumor McDaniels heading to Indianapolis, the rumor not rumor. So it sounds like Vrabes is having trouble putting together his staff. And as I mentioned, the rumors, not rumors, that McDaniels and Patricia are both heading to new locations after Minnesota. How much else of that Patriots staff is heading to a new location after the Super Bowl?
I mean, I have no firsthand knowledge of this, but I just think that I can generally say there's always going to be a guy that we don't know who's really risen up to the ranks that they really hold in high regard, that that when they leave, you'll go, oh, Chad O'Shea, or oh, Brian Flores. Now Brian's gotten a lot of B-Flo's gotten like a lot right. of pub recently because he's, you know, interviewing for head jobs out in Arizona, didn't get it. But I think he's the guy in the system that everyone, you know, would in a minute, when a snap of a finger, would be comfortable slotting him as your DC. So I think they've got some answers there. I think offensively is really where the question is. Do they feel like they have an in-house play caller? I don't know that. And I think the thing that really threw me off a little bit was when Brian Daboll went from Alabama after winning the national championship and took the offensive coordinator job from Buffalo. So he'll be in division, but he to me would have been a more natural, hey, Josh is leaving, come back guy, you know? And when he took that before, you know, you can't know, maybe he had a conversation with Josh, who knows, but if he would have known Josh was leaving definitively, you know, offered a job and hey, I'll take it after, maybe he doesn't sign that quickly. Maybe he comes back because, you know, that wasn't a left on bad terms. That's sort of moving within the system to go coach with Saban, even though it's in college. So it's not as that was not like a Mangini thing, left and went to a place where you're not going to be liked anymore. You know, right. That was different. So I kind of was surprised when Daboll took that quickly, but maybe, you know, maybe sometimes you can't risk it. You don't know that the opportunity will be there later, and you take what you want to take and you get it back into the league. Did what he wanted to do, go win a national championship. But I say that, and I don't know. I have no firsthand knowledge of who they like that way, you know, or if that guy is actually there on the staff now offensively. When Josh is gone, I don't know. But that doesn't mean he doesn't exist, and that doesn't mean that there's not a guy in there that's really heavy-handedly helping build those game plans, and we don't know it, you know, not necessarily as a play caller, but one of the things they do in the off seasons that, you know, happens in a practice, and it's not something that usually makes it to the media eye or ear, but they will do play call sessions where they have other non-coordinators call plays. Like there'll be, you know, scrimmage sessions or situational practices where Scar will call plays, or where, or, you know, B-Flow will call plays, or someone else from the offensive staff, a receiver coach or a backs coach. Maybe it's, you know, somewhere along those lines. But one of the things that is really interesting to me with how the staff will move is you think about all the guys that have been really long tenured guys that are still here, that probably don't fit your profile of moving up to a head job. I mean, you look at Ivan Fears, you look at Scar, those guys have been with the staff forever, and people don't generally mention them. I mean, to me, it would be a bit of a surprise for Ivan to be that guy, but I don't think he's going anywhere. But, you know, maybe they think of him that way. I have no clue. Or maybe he's just like, hey, I'm in a great place. I've been this team's backs coach forever. We do great. I do a great job of developing. I'm going to stay in that role. Scar, I mean, he's just always been the NFL's premier O-line coach, you know? And he's been an assistant head coach for years. Do they feel comfortable, or does he want to be a coordinator for a year, especially since he's already retired once and come back from it? So maybe that's not the move either. So I think as much as it might be interesting to see who slots in the new staff, if you get a whole overhaul, how does it affect some of those long tenure guys? They just continue to stick on as long as Bill stays. You know, I kind of presume that, but who knows? And obviously those guys have been huge assets to what they've gotten done. So I think this is going to be a shakeup year. I think it's going to be an interesting offseason. It's going to be a little bit different looking staff next fall than it is this.
Well, I'm also curious how many guys might go with either McDaniels or Patricia. I know that hasn't happened in the past with this team, not to a large extent. But, yep. You know, could B-Flow end up going with McDaniels or with Patricia to those other destinations?
Yeah, it's possible. And I think what ends up happening in those kinds of situations is it's behind the scenes stuff. Mm. And it's who's friends with who. I think that's a big part of it. You know, who's loyal to who, or what ceiling do you see on yourself in this particular place, right? So, like, if... like Braves is going to be in a difficult spot in Tennessee because I don't know if I say difficult is the right way, but because he's a younger coach and the people that were on the staff that he just left aren't going to be coming with him. It's not like, you know, Romeo Cornell. Maybe Izzo does. I mean, I would obviously cheer for that. I'd love to see my buddy get rehired again, but it's going to be more difficult for Mike to purge, you know, back on the Pat staff, because he may have played for some of those guys but didn't coach with many of them. Now Josh leaves, you know, who does he take? Or is he competing against Patricia for who Patricia might take? Or is there really just no one there because Bill gets in there and says, no, Brian, stay here? But in those moments, it's kind of like free agency, really. I mean, if your contract's up, you have an opportunity to say then, well, okay, what are you going to pay me? You know, am I going to get a significant enough bump to make it worth my while to leave and risk not maybe being able to come back? The other portion of this is like I said, sort of the behind the scenes stuff beyond just who you're friends with, who's got kids. And I think that stuff comes into play. Like Josh McDaniels has got young children who were in the school systems here and once he returned, you know, a long tenure here where he wasn't just going to jump and leave and go to a 2-year spot and get stuck having to move again. And I don't know that, you know, and I'm not going to run through it on the air anyway, but you know, the family situations with each of those guys, will they be, because they've been with the staff for maybe 6-7 years now. That means a lot of them have children and maybe they're in the Franklin Schools District or the Foxborough or Rentham or whatever, or Sharon or wherever they live, Walpole, and they don't want to get up and go. And I think that happens a little bit for guys, unless they think, okay, this is my next step because I want to be a future head coach. If they don't think they're in that vein or they don't think they see their career going that way, then maybe they'll just stick with the loyalty and stick around. So who knows? But it is going to be compelling stuff. And I think a lot of the reasons for the moves we won't be able to see. You know, who's Matt Patricia with buddies? You know, who does he go have a beer with afterwards? Which guy on the staff? Those kind of things. Who's he been close with? You know, him and Bob Quinn out in Detroit, they were close because they were both grinders. I mean, they were both bottom of the barrel dudes when they were here. I didn't even know Bob's name for a couple of years while he was here until Bob Quinn. Now I finally know the red haired dude that gives me rides to and from things when I was a young player, and how he's the general manager of the Lions. But those guys were buddies because they both had to rise up together. You know, and I think that's why people presume that Matt's going to go to Detroit, because his buddy's there. So who remains that would be considered his friend that might go with him? We don't know that offhand. And I think that'll be a big driver in the decisions.
Well, and as I mentioned, all those Patriot connections all have other jobs and placements. So yeah. the pool is getting bigger and bigger, but it's getting dispersed wider and wider.
Exactly.
Excellent. Matt Chatham, where can people find you? You mentioned the Real Deal Patriots podcast.
Yep, the Real Thing Patriots podcast. You can always, obviously, always find it on blogtalkradio.com. And I tweet out, like crazy. It's on iTunes also as well, and Stitcher and all those other places where you can find it. The TuneIn app, excuse me, whatever it is. I'm always bad with that pod. I'm terrible about it. It's iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. That's the big two spots, and I tweet like crazy about it. But at Chatham58 is my Twitter handle. I'm always on NESN. New England Sports Network is my main job, and I'll be out in Minnesota here Monday to Monday doing work and covering the heck out of this game, doing NESN segments. And we're going to do a little extra stuff with the pod this week. The real thing, will be doing some branded segments that will run on NESN that will be kicking around the internet, the interwebs there. So there's going to be some new stuff out there, but I can't divulge it until we've done it. But a lot of it's some bookings with people that are going to be down there on radio and doing Radio Row and doing some stuff there. So as always, with the real thing, we try to keep it more nuts and bolts, football hardcore stuff. And that meant to be sort of counter programming to a lot of the other stuff that's out there. We'll talk off the field stuff at some points, but generally we like to get on the field for real thing stuff.
Yeah, you're not talking jerseys and the silent killer on your show.
No. We're not doing no. Although, we always have fun with that stuff. We go out there, like last year, Alyssa Milano, probably childhood crush for me, you know, mm-hmm. like a lot of people. And she's always out there. She was on NESN at times. It's stuff like that where it's like off-field NFL culture stuff. Have them in, because I think she was pushing she does the NFL's women's apparel stuff. She has a line of clothes with Giants stuff or whatever, and she's out there promoting. And that's all I shouldn't say that's all, but it's a huge chunk of the media week. It's like non-football all week long, so we'll try our darnest to steer the conversation back to the on-field stuff. But it's tough in that environment. It's a weird week, I'll say that.
Maybe eventually I'll take the podcast to Media Row, maybe, but we'll see. It's not this year, that's for sure.
Well, that's the thing about podcasting, man. You don't have to be there unless you just need the guest, but it can be done remotely, and nobody's the wiser, and it's still a good piece of content. So I think I learned from that. I took it down 2 years ago when it was Brady Quinn and Brady Papenga and I, and Brady's working, one's working for Fox, one's working for CBS, and they're off doing segments, and I'm down on Radio Row with the NESN people, and I'm like, this is just as easy to do from my hotel room. there's really no incentive for me to be out here in this hustle and bustle and loudness. If anything, it makes the audio file kind of garbled because there's all the extra noise. So
that's true.
It's cool to be there, but does it improve the product? I don't know. Not really.
Yeah, but when Joe Montana is walking around, pushing, Hanes underwear, I'm more than happy to have him sit down next to me and talk to me a little bit about the game and then say something about Hanes. All right. Thanks, Joe. Oh, look, it's your backup, Steve Young, right behind you. What are you pushing, Steve? All right, great. Come on in.
Selling hand warmers. I'm selling yogurt. I'm selling, sunglasses. Like, everyone's pushing something during that week. And it's just like, okay, former linebacker from the Saints in the 40s. Why are you here? it's that, like, every other one is like, wow, what an eclectic group. Okay. And this, former bandmate of AC/DC, you're on here. Why? Like, this is a Super Bowl. We're supposed to be talking about the Patriots and Falcons, but hi, nice to meet you.
And all those PR guys are lazy. They're not calling me anymore. They're like, oh, we'll just walk down Radio Row. We'll get our 500 shots in one, and then we're done for the week. All right, see you, Joe.
Yeah, it's so incredibly random, and it's just like, it's funny, oh, there's a porn star, oh, there's a comedian, I swear to God, there's a football game that happens at the end of this, but it's just a weird media mishmash.
Matt, thank you as always. I'm sure we will be touching base in the off season.
Alrighty, Pod, take care. Thanks for having me on. Bye bye now.
Big thank you to Matt Chatham and Donnie Wood and Russell Baxter for all the time that they shared with us here on today's show. I appreciate it. If you missed the Superfans, do not worry. They will be back here on Sunday, and we may actually have an extra show for you next week as well. We like to do the gambling prop bets, and that's something that James, our Texans superfan, likes to do. So we might be doing that show next week before we do the proper superfan battle, giving you our picks for the Super Bowl, that show. But coming up on Sunday, we'll have all of the superfans here, and I actually will be making an appearance on Sunday. I know, I don't like to work on Sundays. I like to enjoy my football on Sundays and let the superfans do all the heavy lifting. But probably the most important show of the week, I let them handle. I just do all this fun stuff. But I will be on the Sunday show, be talking to the super fans. We're going to be talking about more of the off-season sort of stuff. The coaching news that's happened. Mike Vrabel, we mentioned here in the interview, new head coach in Tennessee. What does that mean for the AFC South? We're going to be talking about all of that stuff on Sunday. Plus, there's a Senior Bowl going on. We'll give you a little bit of an NFL draft primer. You know, the super fan, super mock draft, one of our biggest shows. One of the main reasons why this show exists is going to be coming up at some point here in the offseason before the actual NFL draft. That's where each super fan gets to act as the GM of their favorite team. And you know, last year I did a whole article about how to make the Browns great again. I can do that again for your team if you'd like. Just send me an email, nextfanup@gmail.com, and I will gladly sim a season or two with your specific team as I am the general manager using the Madden simulator. So take that into mind. I will follow as best I can the NFL rules to free agency and salary cap and all of that. And I will tell you how I can make your organization great again. But I will only do it by request. So you got to send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. I will do that. I'll write up a whole article for you. We'll talk about it here on the podcast in the offseason. It'll be a great time. So nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, on Facebook, where I will also post my How to Make Your Organization Great Again write up. Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. All right. With that, I leave you with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton, you know what you did. You need to come on this podcast, own up to it, stop denying that there's a feud, because there's a feud, my friend, and you know exactly what it's all about. And until you come on this podcast to address this feud, you will continue to close out the show. There you have it.
I never even heard his interview, so I don't know the context in which it was said. I don't know what he said before. I don't know what he said after, so I still haven't seen it. I'm not going to watch it. I don't care, you know. But, you know, I've got no ill will towards Jay. There's no feud between me and Jay. I think we lost the game. He said what he said, and, you know, we're moving on. That's in the past now.